The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Let you guys speak to the break and take questions. How about that?
Sure.
That work for everybody? Okay, so Susanna Sutcliffe, I run the War Crimes Research Office here at the law school. I teach in related areas, international criminal law, international humanitarian law, et cetera. We run a war crime speaker series every year during the academic term where we invite practitioners from the community, from the tribunals that work, that prosecute international crimes, other practitioners in the field to come speak to you about their experiences, the challenges involved in practicing in this field, in this area of law, and to talk to you about particular newsworthy developments in this area of the law. Last year, some of you were here and attended our events. We had, for instance, the chief trial attorney in the Bagasura case, the military case that was tried by the Rwanda tribunal, come speak to you about the litigation of that case. It was ten years, a case that was litigated over the course of 10 years with multiple defendants, with the quote, mastermind of the Rwandan genocide. We've also had events on we had an event on Syria talking about gender, sexual gender-based violence issues in the context of the Syria conflict, et cetera. If you want to know more about the speaker series, come to our site, the War Crimes Research Office site, and there'll be updates, periodic updates about our events. Today, we're extremely excited to have with us a panel of young professionals in this field and related fields, transitional justice, international criminal law, human rights law, civil rights issues, to talk to you a little bit about their experience since they've graduated. We have, I think I'm going to start with you, Scott, a 2004 graduate of the law school, worked with the War Crimes Research Office, not only worked with the War Crimes Research Office, but was one of our first competitor in our first team that we sent to the Jean Pictet International Humanitarian Law Competition, and we'll speak to you about his trajectory, his career post-law school. We have Kate McHugh, who's a BC grad of Boston College of 2011. We'll talk to you about her journey, and then last but not least, Mina Trudeau, a graduate, 2012 graduate of the law school, who came to the law school with a fair amount of experience in international law and international human rights advocacy, but has continued her trajectory in that field. So because we're running short on time, I'm going to send it, give it over to, can we go in that order, Scott, Kate, and Mina? And then what we'll do is give you maybe 10 minutes to talk, all three talk, take a break, get lunch, and then do a Q&A. Okay? Scott, take it away.
Sure. It's nice to be here. I've been joking before that I'm glad to be part of the young profession.
Despite the gray.
Right, exactly. So the 2 minutes about myself, just so you know where I'm coming from, I work for USAID. I'm what's called a democracy specialist there, which is kind of an odd title, but because I don't work in places that are necessarily democracies. But I mostly specialize in good governance, rule of law, and also some transitional justice, especially in countries undergoing transition, so post-conflict, things like that. I was in South Sudan for a referendum to independence there, did a stint in Liberia, places like that. And sometimes I get to go to nicer family-friendly places, too. So that's kind of my official job title. My career trajectory, I guess, is that's the key question. So I was a fellow at the War Crimes Research Office. While in law school, I also did some work with Paul Williams and his group, the Public International Law and Policy Group. While in law school, I then got my first main job after that was going to Liberia, in which I was one of the legal counsels on the peacekeeping mission there. And then I was at the ABA, American Bar Association, with their Rule of Law Project, which many of you may be familiar with, the ABA Rolly. And then I was at the American Society of International Law, and then at USAID. So I followed both in kind of NGO implementers and government practice kind of within the big players within kind of international law and rule of law and good governance around. So American Society of International Law and ABA are in some respects kind of 800-pound gorillas within their you know, within the relative field. I can talk more about my career, but kind of the key takeaways, I guess, of getting to it is there's kind of two sides, from my opinion, to international law. There's kind of the operational side, which is those who are kind of out in the various countries doing international law, you know, on the ground doing stuff. And then there's the people who are doing the legal backbone behind it, often in D.C. or New York, you know, UN, et cetera. Both are very commendable. Both are great work. I'm now on the operational side for it. Both suffer from the main problem, which I used to joke is kind of the years ago I wanted to wait tables when I was in college, and no one wanted to hire me for waiting tables until I had experience being a waiter. And then once you have the first time being a waiter, anyone will hire you. And so the whole trick is getting that first experience out there, which means do whatever you can and whatever you have to do it. It's interesting enough, my opportunity for Liberia happened on a very lucky instance. For when I was at the War Crimes Research Office, we had an opportunity to go to Sierra Leone for a location on the tribunal. There was supposed to be all four of us went, and unfortunately for change of plane tickets, I feel terrible about this. So Shante and I worked at the War Crimes Research Office together, and it turned out only two of the four could go. And I didn't even know this happened, but my name got picked, and Shante's name wasn't picked.
And we picked it out of a hat.
It literally picked out of a hat. Beforehand, we had spent the year doing work for the tribunal, you know, doing really valuable, really, you know, cutting-edge theater, you know, theoretical and real, I mean, work that I still rely upon, you know, for what I learned doing that work. But the interesting thing was, having gone to Freetown for the couple of weeks, all of a sudden, for my next job interview for Liberia, I can say not just that I did work, you know, for the tribunal, but I said, oh yeah, so I was in, you know, Freetown, and all of a sudden that made me much more credible. And it's kind of like the waiting tables thing. All of a sudden, I had been in a post-conflict country. I had not just done work on it in theory, and it made me more credible. I had, you know, basically effectively the story that I could tell. You know, I could say, so when I was in Freetown, and it all of a sudden, whatever followed from that point, all of a sudden meant more, and for it. And then, so therefore, and then from after Liberia, I could say, so when I was in Liberia, and so each one of those kind of, that opened up my job for USAID, because it showed kind of effectively that I could hang, you know. That I was a known quantity and that I had succeeded in these environments. And the irony, of course, is that Sierra Leone, I was only there for 2 weeks. You know, so it's not, we're not talking about, you know, years and years and years of experience, but it's the fact that I'd actually, you know, gone on the plane and been there. And so that kind of, that's whatever it takes, you know, to, if you want to do from the operational side, you know, you have to get out there. And you don't have to be in the hardest, you know, cutting edge, you know, but, you know, Sierra Leone was, you know, I mean, at that point, and I've heard, though, that you can now get to Freetown from the airport.
By boat.
This old Russian helicopter.
Ukrainian.
A Huey helicopter was the only way in, and they would taxi you back and forth, and these old pilots, you know, it was like $20, and, you know, they would fill up the helicopter, fly everyone into Freetown, you know, bring people back to the airport, you know, and this is what it was like in 2003, you know, in which there were still, you know, UN peacekeepers, you know, and, you know, it was still pretty hardcore. But you don't need that. I mean, you know, Phnom Penh is a beautiful, gorgeous, metropolitan, up-and-coming city that, that my parents have been to, on their way to Siem Reap, on vacation. You don't need the most hardcore, but if you went to Cambodia and you did, actual, research there for, special panels or worked for there, all of a sudden you can say you were in, a post-conflict country transition doing it on the ground there, but without telling them that, that Phnom Penh is actually, has really nice hotels and stuff like that. So that's kind of the, from the operational side. From the backbone side, the key part is any opportunity to have done the actual writing and research for it. Because it's the same kind of idea. People want to know you can hang and that you can do it. But for there, it's having deliverables. So if you can show that you've done the research, you've done the work, things like that, there's more opportunity to bring you on. Because the problem is, especially for U.S. government, UN, and all these places, is they're really short staffed. So you're going to get amazing opportunities to do the highest level work from your first couple years out of law school, but that means that they need to rely upon you, that you can actually deliver the highest quality work. It's not like law firms in which you have multiple levels of associates and partners who can supervise and groom you. There's no time to be groomed. You have to be able to hit the ground running. So that means that you need to be able to show. So any opportunities for internships, externships, fellowships, etc., that ones especially in which you're going to do the work. And that was actually one of the benefits from my year at the War Crimes Research Office, and also with Paul Williams, is I was actually doing the work. Susanna and John Cerrone, who were the heads of the office at the time, were advising us and guiding us, but I was actually writing the memo to advise the tribunal. And the fact that I could actually have the thought process and everything and the experience of writing that memo is what I actually was able to do after the fact. So you need to get the practical experience. And by that I mean not research for law reviews and things like that, are useful. It's the writing, the work that is done for these agencies, organizations. So that's my kind of takeaways. I'm more than happy to talk about my work experience and whatever, but that's kind of, I think, the key parts.
Thank you. Scott, a brief plug here. I'm launching a new course next semester, an experiential education course, where I'm going to be spending part of this, it's a seminar, and the experiential part is working on projects for our client institutions at the War Crimes Research Office. So there's a 2-credit seminar plus a 3-credit experiential learning part that will be the first time I teach it next this coming spring. So if you're interested, you can email the War Crimes Research Office about it, and we'll send you some information. Where did we say? Kate's next.
Yep. Hi, I'm Kate McHugh, and I graduated law school 2 years ago now, in 2011, from Boston College Law School. In that time in law school, I spent my last semester working for the Office of the Prosecutor at the Yugoslavian Tribunal, the ICTY, in The Hague. It seemed kind of intimidating when I thought about doing it. I have Croatian ancestry, so I thought I kind of had some into it. Met with my professor. We decided to go for it. I applied. I got in, and I went for a period of 5 months. I was placed on a single trial of the Boleslav Šešelj trial, which is actually back in the news. He's this Serbian political leader who's been serving as his own attorney during the trial that's been going on for very long, over 9 years, I think. And at this point, the prosecution and the defense have rested their cases and they're awaiting decision, but one of the judges has just been taken off the panel. Usually 3 judges that serve in this. But in general, working for the ICTY was really a great opportunity for me to get my foot in the door in international and criminal law. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was in law school. I thought it was maybe something regarding policy, but I had the chance to clerk for a federal judge one summer, and I really liked the criminal stuff that I worked on. From then, I jumped to the U.S. Attorney's Office for the next summer and really liked the criminal stuff I worked on there. So it's just kind of like all these paths led to me being a great candidate for Office of the Prosecutor job at the International Criminal Tribunal, because they love American attorneys and they love people with criminal experience from America. So it really was just the perfect things that worked together. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but every time I picked something, I did something that I knew that I would like doing, and it ended up opening doors to the other things that I like doing. So stick with your gut, do what you think you like, and you'll find more opportunities open as you go into things that you do like. So at the ICTY, I had a really great time. I interned with a bunch of different interns from all around the world. My best friends were from Kosovo and Singapore and China and Brazil, and we were all kind of in the same boat, and only at The Hague for this certain period of time, and we all were on different trials, so we would kind of keep each other updated on what was going on with the different trials, but you just learned so much by being in the middle of it. I had a great time meeting with other senior trial attorneys. I did a lot of the practical work that was kind of would fall to like an associate if it was at a law firm. It would be preparing PowerPoints of where certain crime bases were in parts of Bosnia for a presentation that they were going to give to the judges. It would be changing citations sometimes when they're checking citations. It would be writing memos about how one case compared and how the prosecution presented one case versus how we were going to present a certain crime base in our case, because we needed to keep that consistent. So there was a lot of really like legal stuff that I worked on, but there was also some like stuff that you just kind of do as an intern and as an associate. But it was really a great opportunity to learn all about that case, to learn all about the ICTY. And from there, I finished law school, came back to Chicago to study for the bar, and applied to work at the ICC as a six-month clerk to a judge there.
International Criminal Court.
What did I say?
ICC, I just wanted to do the alphabet.
So the ICTY is a part of the UN, while the ICC is its own separate body that was formed by the Rome Statute. So a bunch of countries signed on to that, and they are now prosecuting certain war criminals from places that have decided to sign on to the Rome Statute. So I worked for Judge Sylvia Steiner, who was Brazilian. This job was unpaid out of law school, and I took it. I didn't know that it was the right thing to do, but I felt that it was something that I really wanted to do, so I made it work. I put my loans on deferment, and they were happy to do that for me, and I spent these 6 months doing what I thought I liked, and I did like. So I worked for Judge Steiner. I was one of her two interns. She had one Brazilian intern, since she's from Brazil, and usually one English-speaking intern as a native speaker, because there's a lot you can offer when a lot of people are from different parts of Europe or different parts of Asia, or English is not their first language, that you can kind of help with the flow of the final product. But for that, I work mostly on what's called the pretrial chamber. Three judges also sit on ICC panels, and I worked on the Calixte Barushimana case. This was an interesting case, and at the beginning, the prosecutor will present the case, and the judges will decide if they're going to confirm the charges. I kind of like to think of it as sort of like the initial indictment that you see in kind of the grand jury process that goes on in the criminal court here. So in that case, this is all... parts of it are public, and it's usually like a three-day presentation just by the prosecution, and the defense gets a certain amount of time to respond to all of the allegations. And at that point, the court will come back and draft a confirmation of the charges. And in this situation, we decided not to confirm the charges because Barushimana was a political leader similar to Sheffield, but he was living in France sending out press releases. So there was a question of what sort of liability he would hold to things that were actually happening on the ground in the department in the DRC. So it was a really interesting case, new ideas that came through, but my kind of job as one of the interns, and the way that it broke down was there were the three judges that would be like the top of the chain. Each of them would have their own senior attorney that would basically be their left-hand or right-hand woman or man. And then below that, there would be some staff attorneys and then interns as well. And I was kind of floating around there, so I would do assignments basically from Judge Steiner's senior attorney. And I basically took all the seven key crime bases that we were looking at that the prosecution was claiming were sites where all different types of crimes had happened, rapes, any sort of crime against humanity or war crime that you can kind of think of. There were 13 total. And at that point, I took all the evidence that they gave us, and the prosecution sort of dumps it on to the judge at this point to look at, to the judges, and organize them by crime base and all the different alleged crimes for the certain crime basis. So it was going through about 6,000 pieces of evidence. It could be UN reports, it could be text messages from Parashimana, it could be text messages from somebody else, it could be phone calls, it could be newspaper articles, it could be the evidence they gave you was just overwhelming. So it was a really great opportunity to just delve into what was going on. I really enjoyed doing it. And at that point, over the turnaround time for a confirmation of charges is usually 60 days, so that's the goal. So we ended up releasing that in December of 2012. And it was a really great opportunity to just meet a lot of people again from across the world that are interested in international criminal law. And I really enjoyed it. That sort of led to me clerking for a federal judge after that. It was a six-month term, and I ended up interviewing for a couple judges and got that opportunity. And there's no way I would have gotten that opportunity based on my grades. It was because I had a good story to tell about what I did at the ICC. And I had some practical knowledge of what it's like to work in chambers, even though it was in international chambers. So from then on, I worked there for about a year, and I just moved here about last month to take a job at the Department of Justice in the Office of Enforcement Operations, which is criminal division overseeing a lot of wiretaps, prisoner immunity issues, media subpoenas. And again, I never would have gotten that opportunity based just on my resume. I did something unique and did what I thought I wanted, and it ended up leaving me with a lot of international criminal experience. And now I can use a lot of those things to do more of what I want to do. And like I said, once you start jumping into things that you like, more and more doors will open. The other thing I would stress is that just keep applying. I applied to DOJ like 300 times, and I finally got a nibble, and that nibble led to an interview, which led to an offer, which led to this job. So you never know what's going to happen. Same thing with the federal judges here in the U.S. I applied to like at least 400. I mean, just keep applying. Something will bite. It's so random, and it's so random whether you get into the ICTY or the ICC. You should just always apply. I don't know if it would help that I can write a website that I look for jobs on unjobs.org. That's a good site.
To the War Crimes Office.
Sure. And just I'll say it out loud, and we can send out an email. But unjobs.org/legal/themes/legal-research. There's internships opportunities on there, and there's a lot of entry level positions for you guys, which would P1 would really be the best thing for you guys. But a lot of times they don't offer those for whatever reason. The UN doesn't offer a lot of those. So you can look to P2s, probably not P3s yet, but the Gs are more like administrative, and P2, P1 would be ideal. Just keep applying, keep your ear out, try things. The more you see things you like, go for what you think is what feels like what you want to do, and things will work out. It might seem intimidating now. I was in your shoes like 3 or 4 years ago, and I didn't feel good about it. But it works out. It always works out. So just keep going with what you really think you want to do.
Thank you.
No problem.
Ma'am. You're on.
Thanks to Adam also for organizing this panel and to participate. I took a somewhat unconventional approach to law school and to entering the legal field. Prior to studying law, I worked in the NGO sector for more than a decade. In the last 6 years prior to law school, I worked with particularly vulnerable refugees and asylum seekers. I documented underreported persecution of cultural, religious, and sexual minorities, and was part of an advocacy effort that led to the State Department making changes in how it reported gender and sexual-based violence in this country reports. Leading up to that, I was director of national and international advocacy and leadership building programs, listening to the policy program, addressing a wide range of social justice issues. When I came to law school, I came as a public interest, public service scholar, so I knew that I wanted to continue working in the public interest realm. I knew that I wanted to work on human rights and social justice issues, and I pursued various experiential opportunities here that helped in my studies and my interests. So I interned at ICTY as well, though I was on the defense side. I worked on the Karadzic case, which is one of the largest ongoing criminal cases, and he's also representing himself. experience. I also worked as a researcher in the UN Committee Against Torture Project here with Dean, and was an attorney at the International Human Rights Law Clinic. And because I wanted to just kind of see what it was going to be like to work on the government side, I did an internship at the White House. They have a number of components, all of which have specific legal offices. So there are a lot of different avenues that you can explore while you're here. And I guess I'll start by saying, you know, a lot of people come to law school because they see it as a solid profession. There are a lot of different avenues to do a lot of different kinds of work. But also, a lot of us, I think, come because we want to make some sort of positive impact in the world. And those kinds of goals, I think, are very well aligned with international criminal law, humanitarian law, and human rights legal fields. The other thing that's, I think, useful as you're entering these fields, and useful to know, is that the law is still developing and it's still being expanded. Legal concepts are still being expanded in these realms. And so that means that positions will also necessarily expand. That said, in certain sectors, at the international court or the criminal tribunals, there are very few positions and there's a lot of competition. So I don't say that because I want to discourage you, but just rather I want to encourage you to think broadly about what kind of work you want to do, how you want to do it, where you want to do it, and keep those options floating around as you explore. So think about what motivated you to come to law school in the first place, what you want to contribute during the lifetime of your career, and you know what kinds of work you really care about, and what sectors you want to work in. Do you want to work in the NGO sector? Do you want to work in government? Which branch do you want to work in? And do you want to work domestically? So those are all kinds of things that you can explore while you're here. Obviously, internships and externships, this has been mentioned, both to explore issues, but also the sectors, because it's not just about the kind of legal issue that you want to work in, but the kind of environment that you want to be in. That makes a huge amount of difference. And even if you do something, you decide, I don't want to do this ever again, keep those contacts, because those are people that you can go back to, obviously, for references, but also things will cross their desk that may be opportunities for you. So stay in touch with people. Obviously, there are a lot of experiential opportunities on campus. We're very blessed. Obviously, the War Crimes Research Office is one of them. It's unique in the country, and maybe globally. And PILPG, the UNCAP, Committee Against Torture Project. These are all very, very unique opportunities. So think about what you want to do and what you want to explore while you're here. Make use of those opportunities. Also, because we're in D.C., we have a lot of events and conferences here, and people come that you might not otherwise get to speak to. So approach them. If you think that they're doing work that you might be interested in, follow up with them afterwards. Schedule an informational interview. It's a great way to kind of make yourself known to people in that field.
You know, you might use your example of approaching Nabi Pillay most recently.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So maybe some of you were also there. Nabi Pillay, the commissioner for human rights, was here. And I was lucky, because that was actually the second time I heard her speak. When I was in the UNCAP project, I went to Geneva for a week, and she opened up the sessions there. But I actually got to talk with her here, so now I'm in touch with her office, which is, you know, great. Who's to say what will come of it? But in any case, you know, you can't know what's around the bend of the road. So, you know, keep your options open, keep in contact with people, and go back to people, remind them, you know, oh, I met you, you know, a couple of years ago, blah, blah, blah. I'm still working in this field, or I'm still interested in this field. Do you have any thoughts for me, or would you be willing to meet with me, or whatnot? People are remarkably interested in acting as mentors. So, you know, as their schedule and time permits. And I'd say that one of our best resources is also WCL professors and staff. I'm obviously prejudiced, but I think we have some of the most supportive professors and staff out there. They have a lot of interest in seeing students and alumni succeed. And so if you meet up with them and just say, you know, these are my interests, or I'm not quite sure what I'm interested in, can you guide me, or do you have any suggestions for me? And so I want to quickly do a little bit of an overview of some of the options that are out there, just to get you thinking if these are things that you haven't already thought of. We've already mentioned some of them, ICC, the criminal tribunals. Also, the UN is a major employer of human rights officers and humanitarian workers. If you're under the age of 32, you can apply through the Young Professionals Program, which basically puts you in the applicant pool, and they will match you, your skill set, up with a job. So it's a great opportunity. UNHCR, the High Commissioner for Refugees, just set up a similar program just this year, and that's open to people under age 40. So that gives you a few more years to enter. And then there's the larger UN family. As you start looking on the UN site, you'll become aware that there are other parallel sites for some of their other operations, so like peacekeeping operations. If you literally want to be on the front lines, you can do that. You can apply for that. ICRC obviously does a lot of humanitarian work. There are national level Red Cross and Red Crescent societies as well. ICRC has a one-year postgraduate fellowship program that you can apply for. A friend of mine did that, and you literally try out every single department within ICRC. It's a phenomenal program. There are a lot of international NGOs. Obviously, we know Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, but there are niche organizations as well that work on victims' rights issues, that work on advocacy within particular fields. There are also departments within, you might not think of it initially, but the World Trade Organization, the World Health Organization, the International Organization for Migration, International Labor Organization. So if you have cross interests, if you're interested in migration, if you're interested in refugee issues, if you're interested in labor law, there are ways that you can incorporate those interests and work internationally. Regionally, human rights systems in the Americas, Europe, and Africa are good options. We're in D.C., so I have to mention the Inter-American Commission for Human Rights. We have something like 40% alums, 40% of the staff are alums of WCL. So there are a lot of connections. It's a good option if you're interested. And domestically, obviously we have some of our agencies represented here, so I won't go too much further into that. Again, NGOs are doing a lot of creative work and are often doing work that you can't necessarily do within government sector, so look at that. And finally, think about research. That's what I'm doing right now. There's a lot of opportunity available for fellowships to expand scholarship in these areas of law, and also LLMs. If you're interested in getting another degree, that can be very useful if you want to work abroad. Not necessarily, but useful. So again, think about, you know, whether you want to do litigation, advocacy, policy, direct services, working with refugees who have fled humanitarian crises. There's a lot out there, so I just want to kind of throw some things into the mix, and hopefully we can get to your questions.
Thank you. I do really want to get to your questions, so I want to encourage us. Thank you, by the way, very